a radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's Gallant.
That's a G.
Yo, and George.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah! On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
No Joe. Sean Mates is in studio. It is Gallant and George, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Yes.
Trial by fire for Young Dong behind the glass.
Yes, it is a way for Anthony to spread his wings without me in there, but still have me close enough in case anything goes down.
So, I like this.
Mixing it up for the third hour.
Exactly. And we're diversifying our station. We are getting more people involved. We like this.
Yes.
We like this. Okay. So, latest for the Astros, winter meetings are upon us, and what they are potentially doing with Kyle Tucker. 3 hours ago, Ken Rosenthal and Chandler Rome posted a piece to The Athletic, which reads as such. Chicago Cubs outfielder Seiya Suzuki and corner infielder Isaac Paredes are two players the Houston Astros are targeting in a possible trade for right fielder Kyle Tucker, sources briefed on the discussions told The Athletic Wednesday. Talks are fluid, and the teams have exchanged a variety of names.
They've exchanged fluids. Okay.
That's exactly what I was thinking. I wonder when people write these articles, if that goes through their head.
I don't think
Ken
Rosenthal thought about that.
No, because
as he was straightening his bow tie.
That is true. The baseball writers are probably not going to smirk in the same way that we would when we read an article like this. Any Cubs package for Tucker, continues this piece in The Athletic, 27, likely would include prospects as well. Third baseman Cam Smith, Chicago's first-round pick in 2024, is another player in whom the Astros are interested. Suzuki might be out of reach for the Astros. A league source said the Cubs are highly unlikely to move him, and they seem to prefer Cody Bellinger in a separate trade. But the Astros' interest in those two signals the team wants to remain competitive, even if it trades Tucker and loses free agent third baseman Alex Bregman, with whom they are negotiating. So right now, they're putting it out there that they are trying their best to compete, which could be posturing. Lots of baseball teams do this. And it could be actually, Sean, a sign that they are perhaps on the verge of making this happen, which, oh my, is a surprise.
Yeah, it does feel like a little bit, if you're this far along the road, where we're getting names in potential pack, not just teams that are interested in Kyle Tucker, but like the possible returns in a Kyle Tucker trade. That makes me feel like this is pretty far down the aisle.
Yeah. So I don't know if anyone's going to run in at the last second. Is it Jim Crane? Is it Jeff Bagwell who's saying, no, you can't do this? Yes. And they put up a boom box.
I object.
Yeah. Well, all of a sudden you're hearing the beautiful tones of Your Eyes by Peter Gabriel playing. Like, I don't know. I don't know if that's going to happen. And if all of a sudden the Astros are moved off of this, but we also got a report from Ari Alexander of Channel 2, who is pretty connected when it comes to baseball. Cubs and Yankees are pursuing Astros outfielder Kyle Tucker, multiple sources tell KPRC. The Astros have had conversations, as reported by both Ken Rosenthal and Chandler Rome, about Suzuki, Paredes, and prospect Cam Smith with the Cubs. The Yankees, meanwhile, are, quote, prepared to make a big offer per that league source. So, okay, we have someone I actually trust reporting that the Yankees are potentially in on this deal. I wonder if the Yankees would go ahead and do it and go after a second straight one-year rental, not as good as Juan Soto. I suppose after they made the move for Max Fried, that some Yankee fans feel better about their chances going into next year, but they did lose a huge bat. Is Kyle Tucker going to make them feel better? It seems like online the consensus opinion from Yankees fans is, yes, we don't care.
Yeah, because you are replacing a left-handed bat with another left-handed bat and two guys that are both MVP caliber kind of players. Like,
right,
where if you say in the next 5 years either one of these guys win an MVP, I would not be in any way surprised, especially with Soto, but also with Tucker as well, who is pretty close to Soto as a hitter and as a base runner, as a fielder especially, he is much better than Soto. So you are getting a more well-rounded player in when you're swapping out Soto for Tucker, you're probably still getting a little bit worse just because Soto's like one of one when it comes to in the box. But you're getting a little bit older as well. And if I'm a Yankees fan, the Max Fried thing, that's cool. Like, sweet. He knows Nick Dottiro, apparently. But I also would like another bat in the lineup, replacing the Soto piece. Because for a lot of last year, it felt like the Yankees were really being kind of dragged in these games just by Aaron Judge and Juan Soto's greatness. And if you lose one of those two guys in your lineup that were so good, you're going to need to replace them. And Tucker, that's about as good as you're going to do.
I agree. Ken Rosenthal was on a MLB Network show, and this is the latest, I guess, on Alex Bregman. You can call this a report if you want. I do think it's more informed speculation, but he says it's difficult to predict the future with the Astros. History suggests, though, that they're not just going to perhaps pass on paying Kyle Tucker in the near future. Right now, they might pass on paying Alex Bregman.
Difficult to predict what owner Jim Crane might want here. Now, if he wants to keep Tucker, he's going to have to pay him. And the Astros have not paid free agents big money under Crane's ownership. Remember, Springer left, Correa left, Bregman likely to leave. He's not staying, I don't believe, for what they're offering. They're going to have to come significantly up to keep Alex Bregman.
That part's interesting. He thinks Bregman's going to leave. The latest that we got on Bregman in the last 24 hours, Dana Brown felt that the Astros made progress yesterday, but did not answer the question when asked if the Astros had made another offer to Alex Bregman. While Scott Boras, Alex Bregman's agent, said, "We've had numerous meetings with teams and owners, and we all know what comes after A, B, that is C, a champion."
I don't want to. That quote almost makes me not want Alex Bregman back.
But this is what Scott Boras does.
I don't want Scott Boras to make a cent of Jim Crane's money.
Do you want to get rid of all Scott Boras clients entirely just based off of his corniness?
Quote. Yes.
I wonder how long he spent on that one. Does he have writers?
That one, I would be surprised if he spent a lot of time on.
I would volunteer to be one of his writers.
I would as well.
I think a writer for Scott Boras' dad jokes probably makes a decent amount of money.
Yeah, because all you need to be like, all right, the guy's name, maybe a thing about him, nickname, whatever. And then I got it from there.
Yeah. So, Scott Boras.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're looking for some part-time employees,
If you want to be a regular in the postseason, sign Alex Bregman.
That was pretty good. Good
off
job.
The top.
Yeah. Good job, Sean. That was good. I like it. Galan and George, no Joe. Paul and Sean in studio. Galan, hey, Tom! Behind the glass. Sorry, I'm just going to keep on doing that.
He's not Italian.
He's not.
To my knowledge. I don't know.
But he's shaking his head no. Do you like being called, hey, Tom? Yes? No? He does. Good. Okay. Now, that might be a loaded question. I'm in the position of power, and maybe this gets some more opportunities with the station. I don't know. Here's more from Ken Rosenthal, and he talks about, get this, the New York Yankees as a possible destination for Kyle Tucker, who was rumored to be in the centerpiece of discussions between the Cubs and Astros today.
Given that history, given that Kyle Tucker has 1 year remaining before he is a free agent and hits the open market, if I were the Astros, I would strongly consider trading him. I would strongly consider trading Valdez. Now, it means, or it would mean in the short term, most likely, taking a step back. And it raises the question, too, of what kind of value you'd get because it's only 1 year. Look at the Yankees, for example. Tucker, of course, would appeal to them. He is a perfect replacement for Soto. He might not be the offensive player Soto is, but he's a better base runner, capable of stealing 30 bases, a much better defender, Gold Glove winner. But it's the same situation as it was with Soto. You're trading significant pieces for 1 year of Kyle Tucker, and then he might bolt on you. So it's a difficult move for them, and yet it will be something that I'm sure they discuss. I'm sure other teams discuss, because Kyle Tucker is one of the most underrated players in the game and one of the best players in the game.
I hate that. And I know there are some rumors that the Yankees are interested. I hate that, though, like the conversation immediately goes back to the Yankees whenever there's a chance to bring it back to the Yankees.
Yeah, and you were right to point out in the first segment that it's like that the Yankees are one of those teams. It's a little bit like the Cowboys on First Take.
Lakers, where NBA talk.
Yeah, where if if there's even like a sliver of chance, you just throw them in the headlines. It's honestly the same with like Texas in football, in college football, Alabama, things like that, Ohio State, where there's just certain names where you can sprinkle those in, and you're going to get a lot more clicks by doing that. But yeah, it does seem like, I mean, with the later reporting from Ari Alexander, that it does seem legitimate that the Yankees are at least in the mix here. But yes, you do notice that the national guys are very Yankees forward with this.
Yeah.
I would like it, though, if he does pull a Juan Soto. That's what the Astros do. You can't make an agreement for a contract extension for Kyle Tucker, but maybe you can make an agreement that you don't sign with the Yankees. We'll trade you to the Yankees. We'll get their prospects, and then you go to the Mets, or you go to the Dodgers. Probably not the Dodgers.
Well, I think, honestly, just with the way that things went down and how slow the Yankees were on the trigger finger, I think there's a chance that the Yankees would just lose in a bidding process. It would be funny if you did add that, just to stick it to them.
Just please do not re-sign with them.
But the problem is, like, the reason this is a problem right now is because the Astros, I think, have, on multiple occasions, made the relationship with Kyle Tucker worse than it needs to be. First, arbitration over $2.5 million. Just give him the 2.5. You're really going to fight over that? Two, last year, they effed that up. They kept on saying that Kyle Tucker did not have a broken bone in his leg. Kyle Tucker said he did. Who's right? Probably the player who suffered the injury. And the weird way that the Astros seemed to imply it wasn't a broken bone felt like they were trying to push him back on the field earlier than he needed to.
And it puts the player in a terrible position. It leaves him kind of exposed for for talk show hacks like us
to
spend 2.5 months being like, why isn't he on the field? Why isn't this guy on the field?
Right. Because you always are going to side with the organization.
Yeah.
If you're someone listening and you're hearing that, you're like, they said he's fine. And Tucker doesn't talk about it.
And selfishly, like, yeah, you want Tucker on the field.
Yeah.
Like, that's just what you want. And when you hear it's a bruise, you're like, how long is this bruise going to take to heal? So, yeah, that cannot have helped. The arbitration things, like, especially, I mean, it's not totally foreign to happen in baseball, but it always seems like it's the precursor to that guy leaves when he gets a chance.
Yeah. I'm wondering how many Astros fans last year were looking at the Kyle Tucker situation and thinking to themselves, you know what? We're actually better without him. I remember there was a time where they were by record.
Yes. Better. When you could just do the record. It was also when the entire season turned around and when Jose Abreu left the team.
Yeah.
There's a lot of other extenuating factors, but yes, they did have a good record without Kyle Tucker. And then you saw Kyle Tucker in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Isaac Paredes can do that.
He
Seiya Suzuki could do that.
Kyle Tucker brought this upon all of us. Let's be honest. Like, I don't want to talk about this. And Kyle Tucker sucking in the playoffs made this actually debatable.
Yeah.
Had Kyle Tucker played well, you're like, yeah, you got to make this deal happen. You got to abandon your old policy.
I mean, get a few RBI in the Tigers series.
Oh, yeah. Literally, like, two.
They might be in the World Series.
Exactly.
Like, it was a very – it was not a tough AL or AL playoffs last year. And, yeah, if you get past – if you score some runs in your two home games against the Tigers, like, you have a pretty good shot to go on a deep run. And we're not going, oh, my God, the Astros are going to blow up the core.
He had opportunities, too. That's what makes it worse. They're going to have to shake this old mentality, I think, at some point. I just wonder when. This quote from Jim Crane was brought up in the Chandler Roman, Ken Rosenthal piece about how the Astros and Alex Bregman conversations are going earlier in the week. Quote from Jim Crane back in the day. You have to look at the length of a contract because they normally don't work a very high percentage. You have to be cognizant of that because the longer the contract's on the back end, it gets difficult to carry it. And you decrease your ability to be competitive when you got a lot of money tied up. Now, ironically, yeah, that also happens when you sign Jose Abreu, Rafael Montero, Lance McCullers, Ryan Presley. However, fine.
It's not for a long time. It
feels like a long time. But
it's not for a long time.
Technically, it's not for a long time. He avoids longer contracts. If he wants to, I think, cross the finish line with Bregman, this is the exception that they're going to have to make.
The rule.
Yeah. Right. Because Tucker, If they bring back Bregman and they trade Tucker, I'm not going to be mad. If they trade Tucker and they let Bregman walk, I will be mad. I will say they lied to us when they said we're going to keep the window open as long as they possibly can. And I think they should leave the window open as the house collapses. And just have a symbolic window that was there. This is the Astros run from 2015 through 20 whenever it ends.
Now it seems like a headstone is what you're describing.
Well, yeah, it will be. It'll be a window.
Okay.
A window headstone. That's new.
Yeah, no, I agree with you that it will be very tough. I just whether or not it works, because like we won't know whether it works for at least a year or two.
For sure.
It is the PR hit that the Astros are going to take with the fan base if Bregman walks and they actively trade Tucker, because Tucker would be the first guy that they go out of their way to get rid of. Normally, they take it all the way to the finish line. They walk for nothing. Like this one, they're actively shopping them. And that I feel like that, along with losing another member of the 2017 Astros, like that is you're chipping away at a lot of goodwill that you had.
They say they let it go towards the end of, or they seem show that they go to the end.
You at least get them for every year that they're contracted to play for you.
I saw some Astros fan posts, like, it's pretty funny to see all the contracts the Astros have passed on, and we've justified it by saying, well, you got to save that money to sign the next guy, and then the next guy leaves. So it's like, oh, George Springer, well, you got to sign Correa. Oh, Carlos Correa, well, you got to sign Alex Bregman. Oh, Alex Bregman, well, you got to sign Kyle Tucker. Right. Like, it's just on and on and on and on. It's kind of funny. Okay.
You got to sign Chaz McCormick. You got to sign, I don't know who's next on the list of guys you need to sign. You got to sign Hunter Brown, Paul. You got to sign Hunter
Eventually
Brown.
Eventually you will.
That's coming up.
That's not for a while. Yeah, you're right. It's going to be Gerrit Cole all over again. From the 361, where Crochet brought back, the Red Sox traded for Gerrit Crochet. They traded their top four prospects, or at least they're in the stages of finalizing that. Why wouldn't the Astros do a trade? Fromber, could the Astros use Tucker for a third baseman plus prospects? Yeah, but the thing is, like, you're just not going to get someone as good as Bregman in a trade. You might get multiple players who are solid, and look, your lineup has multiple holes that you need to fill. It's not just like, hey, what happens in a post-Bregman world and what happens in a post-Tucker world? Like, there's other situations that you got to resolve. But I just feel like you're not going to get back the one player in exchange that makes up for losing said one player.
Yeah, you're not going to be able to 2001 Moneyball this thing. You're not going to be able to be the Oakland A's with GM Brad Pitt rebuilding guys in the aggregate. Like that, that it sounds good, makes for a good movie, but it's very hard to do, and it's very hard with a team that the last 2 years had been in dogfights to win their division, and now you're taking out two of the best four hitters in their lineup from last year. A team that, again, did not get out of the wild card round because they could not score runs.
Correct. Text from the 409. This is 409 Josh. One, you should start trying to guilt trip Bregman into not leaving Altuve as the lone scandal survivor.
Mm. Okay.
Tug at his heartstrings for his buddy.
I like that.
I think Altuve's kind of already doing that, though, by saying, like, yeah, pay him.
Yeah. He did that, in the, Game 2 post-game press conference.
Yeah,
he
was like right away.
We need to resign
him. We need to resign him. No, Altuve has done everything he possibly can. It's a matter of Jim Crane. Yeah. 409 Josh also texts, it's unfortunate we couldn't trust the Astros medical staff if they said Bregman's end-of-year injury will impact his future. I don't know if they said something along those lines, but I would say I bet that Alex Bregman had a different take on his elbow gremlins than the Astros training staff did.
Yeah. I mean, just body of work would not be surprising. No. It would not be surprising if there was some, whether Bregman thought it was more serious or less serious, the Astros doctors on the other side of that.
A thought that just came to me. What if you fire their training staff now? Does that help you bring back Bregman? Does that help you bring back Tucker? Just fire the training staff right now. Clearly they suck. They clearly suck. Like, there's no debating that. Or at least the players don't like them, I would imagine, just given all the injuries that they have. If you can them, it doesn't even matter who you hire to fix. They're all going to assume that, like, you can't do any worse because that's all they've known. So, like, is that the sacrificial lamb that maybe makes a Bregman or a Tucker like, eh, you know what? They're listening to me finally.
I'm not going to sit here and stick up for the Astros doctors. The Astros training staff the last, at least 2 years that have been absolute butchers when it comes to their team.
Oh, yeah, they're barber surgeons from the 1600s, baby.
I just think too much hay is in the barn with those two guys. Like, I think we're too close to the finish line of, frankly, these guys leaving, that it actually will matter the sacrificial lamb of the Astros team doctors. Although, I'm not against the move.
Yeah, why not? Why not? Hey. I mean, it can't
Paul,
hurt.
We're talking about someone's job. That'd actually be very funny. Jim Crane fires him right before Christmas. I mean, try in a futile gesture to try to get Alex Bregman back.
I mean, yeah, it'd be funny for us because we got a dark sense of humor. For them, no. But hey, if you get it done now, like the earlier you get it done,
the faster they can find a job before Christmas.
Exactly.
Okay.
Or they can do some fill-in part-time work around Christmas time. Well, what, Sean? When I first got my job in radio, I was on call, and I made like 90, maybe not 90, 90 is extreme. I made a good like 30 to 40% of my yearly salary by just working ridiculous hours on the holidays.
No, that is correct. That is something that happens in this industry and a lot of industries. Mm-hmm. I still think it's bad. Again, it's bad headlines to be like, Ebenezer Scrooge, Jim Crane fires team doctors right before Christmas.
I once produced 8 hours worth of shows and then hosted 8 hours worth of shows in a day.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And holiday time. So you got like
time and a half.
Extra time and a half. Okay. And on top of that, overtime. So it was overtime and holiday
overtime.
Pay.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I knew what it was. I wasn't getting that many hours. So around Thanksgiving and around Christmas, I just didn't leave. I brought a cot. I slept in the producer's studio.
I was going to ask, it wasn't 16 straight hours.
Or oh, it was 16 straight hours.
What?
I didn't care. No, I wanted them. I was like, I'm going to prove that I'm the best.
I just would have asked for like, or I would have wanted an hour break.
They probably gave me.
Break.
They probably gave me a. Maybe it was like a 4 hour break. I don't know. I like, but like I.
No,
like,
you're still there for 20.
I
hours.
Was so. I was. Yeah. Well, yeah, I was there for like 2 days straight. Once. I mean, yeah. What's the point of going home? You're just going to stay here. Plus, I might fall asleep and not wake up because that's my big bugaboo. You can't get over the snooze button. Someone texted in because we were talking about this was Key from L.A. We were talking about like little sweeteners that you could throw in a deal. Paul, when you signed at ESPN 97.5, 92.5, did you get a new chair to sit in? No, because and sadly, all the fatty boombatties of our station—I will not name names—broke all the chairs. They broke all the chairs. This chair, my chair, is broken. Someone broke it. Who broke it?
I don't know.
I know. You don't know. You didn't send it. Tone didn't send it.
You're just making eye contact.
No, I'm just. Who do you think broke it?
I don't know. Too many to tell. There's so much, so many moving parts here. I'm not going to sit here and say someone's name.
I know. I'm
sitting in a chair with no back, all
right? This chair has a back, but the back leans to the right very far, and it seems to be destroying my posture. And I'm not a fan of that. It's not Tempur-Pedic.
No.
People say that about chairs.
Ergonomic.
Ergonomic. There we go. Thank you. Same thing. Are they? No, they're not. He's Sean. I'm Paul. It's Gallant and George. No Joe. Tone behind the glass, 713-780-3776 to call, to text. You can join us on YouTube at ESPN Houston. There's an awesome piece about Ime Udoka in ESPN. I want this guy to be emulated more by other coaches, including by one coach in this city who, I got to say, not really feeling the return to work. We'll discuss. Stay put.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. It's Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
No Joe, Sean sitting in for him. Dong! Behind the glass for Sean. I'm Paul Gallant. Here's the latest on the Astros at baseball's winter meetings. This is the most BS report I can remember, but this is how reporting goes these days. Mark Feinsand is an MLB.com senior national reporter and MLB network insider. Wait, is he the insider or is he a senior national reporter? I can't say. He has two titles for the same company that he works for. Whatever. Here's what he reports, I say in quotation marks. There's a sense that Alex Bregman could be the next big free agent to sign. End quote. Are you serious?
There's a sense.
there's a sense
he could be
that he might sign. It's such a low bar for reporting now. What does that even mean?
No, there's a sense that he could be the next big free agent. There's going to be some little ones, Paul.
Well,
there's some little free agents signing.
And Joe's not here to defend little people, but he's a little person. Is he a big free agent? Subjective, but in terms of his ability.
Stature in the league. Yes.
On the baseball field. Stature in the league, right. Yes. Not stature literally. The Astros, Red Sox, Yankees, and Tigers are among those
like that.
In the mix.
That's my favorite part of the report, is that there's a sense that he could be the next big free agent to sign. Again, like you said, doesn't mean a lot. Also, there's four teams in the mix.
The Astros are the first one listed. Mm. If you really want to read too much into this, note that.
It's not alphabetical. Either.
It's not in alphabetical order because the Yankees are not last. So are the Astros in first, the Red Sox second, Yankees third, Tigers fourth. But
what is Mark Feinstein trying to tell us?
It's a great question. Are the Tigers at the end of this going to say, we were just thankful to be a part of this process? Probably.
That's
kind of how
actually,
we
can't throw shots at the Tigers.
No, that's true. They dust busted the Astros, which I predicted the Astros would do to the Tigers in that BS playoff round that I guess we can't even call a BS playoff round anymore. Anyway, Tim McMahon of ESPN wrote a fun piece about the Houston Rockets, who have their NBA Cup matchup against the Golden State Warriors tonight. The Warriors have won 15 straight games against the Rockets. That is insane, but then again, you remember how poor the Rockets have played, honestly, up until Ime Udoka took over last year. This article is about the culture that Ime Udoka has installed in the Rockets. And it's really fascinating hearing McMahon write about how Udoka evaluates Amen Thompson, who gets the most tough love on defense. I'm going to read a passage. When Thompson, the man he's guarding, gets a bucket on Thompson, Thompson tends to look towards the sideline to see how Ime Udoka reacts. There isn't much mystery. Said Ime Udoka, quote, I am bothered, end quote. Fantastic. That's an understatement, writes McMahon, and not an unusual state of mind for Udoka. As Rockets point guard Fred VanVleet put it, quote, well, he is always pissed off, end quote. I like that. I like that he's mad. Sorry, I think a bad coach gets more out of you than a nice coach. You should probably have a balance of the two. This article by Tim McMahon continues, and he paints a descriptive picture of angry Ime Udoka. Quote, Udoka's brow furls and his eyes narrow when he's disappointed in any of his players' defensive effort. But he's particularly perturbed when Thompson falls short of the coach's high expectations. It's an especially seething sneer anytime Thompson gets scored on. What a random thing to get mad at. I guess because Amen Thompson's defense under the hoop is ridiculous. Yeah. Everyone used to have a boner for James Harden's defense underneath the hoop. Wow, he's really good in post defense. Oh, yeah, the one time where he doesn't have to move laterally side to side, he just stands there like a big lard because that's what he is. Oh, he puts more effort in there. Well, it's easier because he just has to stand there and the guy can't back him down. Whatever. He's mad when Amen Thompson doesn't play good defense. Thompson said, imagine the most mad face ever staring daggers at you. Said Rafael Stone about, again, anyone scoring on Amen Thompson, he's not particularly happy when someone scores on him. In Ime's world, that should be an impossibility. And if it occurs, it's because Amen did something wrong. We're not talking about Dikembe Mutombo here. You know, we're not talking about peak Dwight Howard or Hakeem Olajuwon or anyone. We're talking about like a rookie in his second year who's like kind of a tweener player.
Yeah, he's like 6'7". I mean, great athlete. But yeah, I think That is something where, yes, you're right. This is the type of coach that can get a lot out of a player, especially a young group who they're not, you know, veteran players. They're not like, hey, listen, dude, I've already made hundreds of millions of dollars. Can you please stop screaming at me every night? Like, it is a young group still trying to find their way in the league. At the other time, like, I can see why, like, wait, every time someone scores on me, it's my fault?
I like it.
I'm in the NBA.
So?
Kevin Durant's just going to shoot over me sometimes. I don't. What am I going to do?
Failure. failure. I like that. I like being so obsessed with perfection that nothing is fun anymore. And that's probably because I grew up a Patriots fan and I saw it in action. And yes, I sort of overlooked the convenient Tom Brady was there thing.
Yeah, that helped.
It did help. But I'd like to see this with our Houston Texans. And I said this because coming back from the bye week at his Monday press conference, DeMeco Ryans had this to say about what the Houston Texans are going to be focusing on now that they're back.
The biggest thing is hard for us is, as I went back and watched it, it's us getting back to the basics and fundamentals of ball, right? And it's us just executing on those, we call those simple things of football, right? It doesn't change. And this time of the year, it's not so much about the scheme. Everybody knows what everybody's doing, right? It's about how do you execute, and are you executing better than your opponent? Are you protecting the football? Are you taking the football away? Putting yourself in favorable position, playing complementary football. So as I go back and dissect it all, it's just about us getting back to the basics and playing our brand of football and executing the right way.
Well, your brand of football is not being perfect. Your brand of football is mistakes. We're going back to fundamentals. It is week 15.
Going back to fundamentals, Paul.
Sean, we're going back to fundamentals. I don't know how many people have seen the movie Angels in the Outfield. I grew up watching it.
I want you here in uniform at 9 tomorrow. We're going back to work on fundamentals.
Fundamentals? In the middle of the season?
See, I like that George Knox, played by Danny Glover, I like that in that moment right there, he was willing to go back to fundamentals early in the year. That should have been something they've been working on for a while instead of talking about the little positive things. And, okay, look, two different sports, but basketball is the sport with more divas than football. And Ime Udoka doesn't give a damn. And his approach is just a constant obsession with perfection to the point where a second-year player in Amen Thompson, who is younger than most NFL players, is failing every time he allows a bucket, which in basketball happens a lot. The over-under for tonight's game is what, 220?
Yeah.
That's 100 baskets at least. At least.
Among the two teams, zero right. of those should be on Amen Thompson.
If any of them are on Amen Thompson, Ime Udoka's pissed off. And, okay, Paul, this is an apples-to-orange comparison. You can make that case, but think about that. The biggest turnaround that we have seen in year one and two has been just the approach by Alperen Şengün and Jalen Green defensively. There's a passage in this piece by Tim McMahon. Quote, the reason why we have overall made the jump is the buy-in and improvement from the non-defenders. Challenging our guys to take pride in one-on-one defense and then trying to build some schemes around guys to protect them and put them in a better position to be successful. There is no denying that Green and Şengün care more.
Yeah.
This is embarrassing for basketball as a whole that like caring about defense actually leads to good defense. It is embarrassing. But when you have a coach that's like that with the little things or the little moments, it's going to improve. And I'm sure that any moment that Jalen Green or Alperen Şengün aren't hustling is sometimes related to when these guys are sitting on the bench of the fourth quarter. Wouldn't it be nice if DeMeco incorporated any of this? Can next year, Ime Udoka in the offseason, after their season is done, can he be a consultant for the Texans?
Yeah, or just in August, speak to the team. Like, just give a Derek Stingley, every time someone completes a pass on you, it's your fault. No matter what Eric Murray was doing, it's your fault.
Why not? So, we all were so happy about DeMeco Ryans being hired last year, and we're all happy with what he did the first season with this team. He did have help of C.J. Stroud and did have the help of a very favorable schedule. Hey, they're 8-5. Winning is important in this league, and as the Chiefs are proving, it is hard to win every single game, even if they are winning every single game. But sometimes you gotta be a dick. And I wish that that was a club that DeMeco had in his back. And I just don't get the sense that he has. Not because I know what's going on behind the scenes. I don't. But that they cannot clean things up from a week-to-week basis, and that in week 15, we're talking about fundamentals.
Yeah.
Frustrates me.
At least he didn't go like, hey, we try to put the fun and fundamental.
Oh, God, like he's Scott Boras.
We're just trying to have fun out there. CJ Stroud, it's about playing fun.
Well, he's done that. I mean, that's what's been frustrating about this year is when we hear them talk, you're like, oh. You're not saying the things I want to hear. I'd rather you just grumble at me and clear your nostrils like your Bill Belichick used to do, you know? Like, I'm reading a lot into this. I realize that. But I wish that this focus on fundamentals for the Texans was a thing. It clearly has not been. This would not be happening on a week-to-week basis if they were like this. If they were like the Houston Rockets. I strongly believe that. I suppose we'll see the rest of the way. Maybe this week off and a focus on the fundamentals for week 15 will help the Houston Texans out against State better than their record Miami Dolphins team, who is 6-7. It is Gallant and George. Sean Mapes sitting in for Joe. I am Paul Gallant. Anthony! He's behind the glass. You want to chime in, 713-780-3776 to call, to text 2 hit songs in garbage time that will get you in the Christmas spirit. Stick around.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Gallant and George with special guest star Paul Gallant and recurring character Joe George.
Last chance to dance, Gallant and George, no Joe. Sean sitting in studio. Anthony behind the glass. So, latest on all things Houston Astros is there's a sense that Alex Bregman will be the next free agent to move this offseason, whether it's back to Houston or to the Red Sox, Yankees, or Tigers. Kyle Tucker's name is the centerpiece of discussions with the Chicago Cubs for a trade. The Yankees are sniffing around as well, but nothing really news happened over the last 3 hours outside of that last report by Mark Feinsand of the MLB that there's a sense that Alex Bregman is going to get a deal.
Could be the next big free agent to move. So, yeah, I mean, I guess to me, just over the course of the day, it seems like more and more of a certainty that Kyle Tucker will be traded. We just don't know where or for who or for what. Well, I guess we know for what, but
yeah. Yeah, exactly.
For what?
Yeah, that's how I feel.
Dana Brown, we feel good about the guys we got back. I can't wait for the Dana Brown post-trade press conference.
Well, we got rid of one player and we got two. That's what he'll say, 100%. If they make a trade that involves Kyle Tucker for Paredes, Suzuki, and that prospect, that is exactly what he will do. It's just how Dana Brown operates. He's rather predictable with the things that he says. Also, we've got an NBA Cup game tonight between the Rockets and the Warriors. Rockets 2-point favorites at home. It does look like everyone's going to play for the Warriors this time around. We'll see with Tari Eason. Fred VanVleet does seem like he'll be back out there, so everyone should be full strength. Fun test for the Rockets. They were just showing on ESPN, I think, a montage of like the greatest recent moments in Rockets Warriors, and I want to pour one out for Chris Paul. I felt Chris Paul was unappreciated for his 2-year period in Houston.
Yes.
The hamstring injury that he suffered in Game 5 against the Warriors, you're really going to be mad about him for suffering that when he's the reason that they won that game? I feel like at the end, when Paul got pushed out, I don't like how everyone automatically sided with James Harden. It felt like more people sided with Harden than with Paul.
Yeah, I get Chris Paul isn't the guy everyone loves. Like, I get that he is a tough hang.
Yeah.
Not just for the players themselves, but also like watching it, you're like, you know, Chris Paul's, it's not exactly what I call likable out there, but he is without a doubt what made those Rockets teams a cut above all the other James Harden era Rockets team. I mean, the first year he was on the Rockets, they immediately had a franchise record for wins.
Yep.
Like, just boom, right away.
He gave a bleep. I think his give a bleep made everyone else around him give a bleep. And that Tim McMahon article about Ime Udoka brings up how Fred VanVleet's giving a bleep is one of the reasons that they signed him. And yeah, he does seem to, but Paul was different, and I enjoyed a couple of moments that they were showing. First off, the time where Paul gets into it with Steve Kerr with the fake laugh.
Yeah.
And next, when Paul hit a three in Steph Curry's face and then shimmied in front of Curry on his way to the other side of the court. Like, Paul had some fun moments.
Those were the good old days when it comes to the Warriors-Rockets matchups of the past. And NBA Today showing them all back-to-back-to-back-to-back like that, you're like, wow, they really did lose a lot to the Warriors. A lot of them are very pro-Warriors. They threw in a Steph Curry buzzer beater over Kevin Porter Jr. Oof. In 2022. I was like, there's no reason for that.
Well,
that,
it's part of the 15 straight wins.
That's not good.
They didn't show the 27 missed threes, which I'm thankful for.
Well, because they do have to fit in a time clock. They can't,
they can't do it all at once.
Show 90 seconds of missed threes.
They didn't show Steph Curry's war against big orthodontia with the mouth guards that he would bite in the side of his mouth either.
No, they didn't. They didn't show that. They didn't show Kevin Durant being like 4 feet out of bounds on one of the regular season matchups.
No, they didn't call it.
Yeah. Hopefully, it's a new era for Rockets basketball. An era where they can beat the Golden State Warriors.
It starts now. Hashtag liftoff.
Liftoff, baby.
Because, yeah, it's very
one-sided. Ime Udoka is going to scream at these guys so much.
He will.
If they give up a single point. What if they shut out the Golden State
Warriors? That would be pretty awesome. Can they hold the Warriors under 12 points in a quarter? That's the equivalent of a shutout.
I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, let's see what happens.
That just feels shutout-ish. So yeah, let's do that, Rockets.
Time for a little garbage time.
Oh, I love trash.
Garbage time.
It's garbage.
Starts now.
I'm the trash man.
This is garbage.
Christmas season's upon us. I watched Die Hard last night.
Okay.
Featuring some transnational criminals. Hans Gruber is transnational. That's the new way to describe international thieves.
I mean, he did have facial hair. So.
But he's he's from Germany.
Oh, okay.
Right?
Okay.
That's that.
Oh, that's what you mean. Yeah, like the guys that break into NFL players' house. Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We got a new Christmas song. This isn't from the Costco guys.
No, no more Costco guys. We're not going to try to get y'all with that anymore.
This is just Costco guys adjacent, because here is the Rizzler singing a little Christmas bars for you.
Like a polar express, the way my name ring bells. I got checked out more than people in hotels. Rizzy, baby, all I got to do is flex a jaw, and I can steal them like Terry Bradshaw. I guess I'm the Grinch, the way you do. I never heard of you, that's why you live in Whoville? Swag Santa, Bat Grabber, Black Panther. What kind of verse do you kill?
Gotta say, whoa. No, he didn't write
that. The kid can write what?
He didn't write that.
No.
Well, I mean, this show struggles with phonetics, me mostly, but I saw this child online trying to pronounce words as part of a TikTok that went viral, and he struggled.
Well, I mean, he's still a little boy.
But that was incredible.
That was very good.
Even if
he didn't write it, which I'm willing to say, I can believe that he didn't write it.
I don't think so.
He still delivered it very well.
He delivered it great. That sounded like a little rapper kid. He sounded like an expert.
Yeah, he didn't sound that bad. That's why you live in Whoville?
That was fantastic. I gotta say, I think that's more creative, like those 20 seconds, than anything the Costco guys have done. I do like Bring the Boom. Don't get me wrong. But I didn't like it at first, and it grew on me because I know it makes everyone angry, and I think it's funny to watch people get so mad at the, we bring the boom, double chunk chocolate cookie.
I just don't know why we have to pit these two titans of TikTok against each other.
I don't know
why this has to be like NSYNC or a boy band where you're either team Costco guys or team Rizzler.
I'm creating drama through conflict. And when these two have their inevitable divorce.
No, don't say that. My heart can't take it.
When AJ and the Rizzler have their first fight, you know, which will probably be when AJ, who's a huge kid, tall.
Big Justice is...
Big Justice is the kid?
Yeah.
Like, Big Justice and the Rizzler, at a certain point, like, are they going to be able to hang out with each other? I don't know.
They
look like they're dramatically different ages.
Yes. I think once Big Justice goes to high school, maybe it gets tougher to bring the Rizzler around.
Hell yeah, dude.
Although, I feel like this is all the long, long buildup to...
Hit him up?
No. A celebrity boxing match between the two in like 15 years.
For sure.
We're just paving the way for Costco guys versus the Rizzler in Jerry World.
Let's go. The Retro Cry says, Paul's brain rot is terminal.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. But you're now, by osmosis, having a little brain rot yourself.
Yeah, you're catching secondhand brain rot.
How about that? Yeah. Not good. Anyway, on that note, big thanks to everyone who tuned into today's show. Big thanks to Anthony behind the glass, stepping in a big way. Big thanks to Sean Mapes, who's been producing and hosting today. Our texters, Twitchers, YouTubers, and our callers. I am merely Paul Gallant. So long, farewell, and have yourselves a wonderful Wednesday. The Killer Bees are up next. Peace!